Hello, rap fans. It's Richard Herring here. Thank you for listening to my podcasts, powered by Acast Plus. Do tell your friends if you think they might enjoy them too. And do come and see me on tour in my show, Can I Have My Ball Back? Go to richardherring.com/ballback/tour for all tour dates, going to lots of places in the UK. Some extra gigs added in London at the Leicester Square Theatre and the Bloomsbury Theatre. The Leicester Square Theatre first gig is very nearly sold out, so do rush along to those shows, London, if you want to come along. Some of the shows selling fantastically well, some of them selling pretty badly. Hello, Swindon. Do you know I'm coming to your town? Please buy some tickets. And I do have to give a trigger warning. I've done the show only a few times and 6 men have passed out. After the bit where I explain what happens to you during an operation for testicular cancer. So, are you man enough to handle my balls? Only come if you are, have lots of balls and are not scared of balls. There is some mild testicle trauma involved in this story of testicular cancer. It's mainly funny, though, and if you don't come, that means you're scared to come, and I'm going to judge you, so... It's like going on a fairground ride, so do come along. It's going to be very exciting to see if you make it through. I'll give you a badge if you make it through unscathed. Anyway, come and see the tour, richardherring.com for all that news. Some great Rahalastapas coming up, I have to tell you, in the next few weeks. The tour was a lot of fun. Thanks very much to everyone who came. Sit back, relax, and enjoy my stupid fucking podcast.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Clapham Grand. Please welcome a man who almost made an indecent proposal to his friend's wife. It's Richard Herring! Thank you very much. Oh, hello, it's lovely to see you all. Welcome to the Clapham Grand, and welcome to... Let's get the right page. They can add that about and I'll look brilliant. Should be near the back. Ah, here we're nearly there. Oh, yeah. Welcome to Richard Herring's Loathsome Sweaty Torso podcast. I don't know if it's just me, 53 years old. I started exercising again. Really stink. When I exercise, I really stink. It's terrible. Never use my sweat. And even to myself, I think that is a bad smell. Might talk about it later. I might let you all have a sniff. I've not been... Let me know if it starts smelling weird. It smells like cabbages. If you start smelling cabbages, madam, let me know. It's because I'm eating a lot of vegetables. It's like my whole body has become asparagus wheat. It's like if I eat cruciferous vegetables, it comes out of every pore, which I do for breakfast. You could look like me, mate, if you... I mean, you're both the skinnier than I am. I don't know why I picked on you. You might get your hair back, though. That might happen. But I was talking... I'm going to put my glasses on. I don't know why I'm pretending I can read when I can't. I was looking at my magic eye picture the other day. I've been looking at it for about 30 years. I've been unable to see what it was. But this time I saw it. It was saying Rahalastapas. I don't know if that's going to... Don't know if that's going to catch on. So, I almost made an indecent proposal to my one of my good friend's wives because
It was kind of bedtime. I was with the kids, and the kids were dicking around with my watch and saying, "Hey Siri," and that's going to do it. My son said, "Hey Siri, play London Bridge is Falling Down," because he loves London Bridge is Falling Down. So of course Siri started playing London Bridge is Falling Down by Kirsty MacColl, because that's what the three-year-olds want to listen to. That's his... Siri's very good. And they were dicking around with the watch a bit, but I don't know. And I said, "All right, come on, we should go to bed," because it was bedtime. And then my phone made a bleep, and I looked down at it. It says, "Do you want to send text message to wife of my good friend saying we should go to bed?" And it's worse than that, because my friend actually died about 18 months ago. So it's actually my best friend's widow was about to get a text saying, "We should go to bed. I haven't contacted her very much since the funeral. But I've left her 18 months. We should go to bed. What do you think?" And then I've got to make sure I press the right buttons. I'm going, "My God, oh my God." I'm trying to... My wife is luckily sitting right beside me, so I can tell this story and she will believe that it... I mean, if that had been, you know, that's quite exciting. If it had said, "Didn't send," luckily I stopped it, but I still had to go and check my phone to see that I hadn't accidentally sent it. Because it's hard to get out of that, isn't it? Especially if she texts it back and goes, "Yeah, fine. Let's go for it. 18 months, isn't it? You're right, we should." So, you know, I don't know if Siri is trying to ruin my life or just make my life a lot more interesting. Yeah, there could be. I still kind of feel so terrible about the possibility that could have. What would have happened if I'd sent? And now I've said it. It's going to fucking send this. So I'm talking to my phone. The possibility of that going and then having to go, "Oh no, I mean it." Oh fuck! I'm cringing with embarrassment. And I have been. I have been trying to get fit as well. It's going quite well. I row 6 kilometres three times a week at the moment. I don't leave the house. It's on a rowing machine. I've been running every other day. I'm running a half marathon in November. It's all coming together pretty well. But you do stink. I was at the zoo yesterday, and my daughter, who's now 6 years old, she's a big six-year-old. She's tall. And I carried her around the zoo for about 10 minutes without having to put her down. I'm getting pretty strong. So cancer's going to regret meddling with me. It's come for me, and I'm going to show it that I am indestructible. I cannot die. So if you feel like sponsoring me for that half marathon, it's justgiving.com/monoball. I made a sacrifice for you, and that money will go to the NHS, the people who've dealt with my issue. I don't know why I'm thanking them. They cut off my bollock and then gave me chemotherapy, made me feel very sick. So they should be giving me money, right? They could raffle that bollock off, and they could make themselves. There's people in this room who pay good money. I can tell you that right now. Anyway, my guest this week is probably best known for playing audition judge in Genie in the House. That's why we're here. I have people stunned into silence just remembering that performance. Will you please welcome the amazing Izzy Sooty, ladies and gentlemen. It's Izzy Sooty. Yes. From Genie in the House. Hello.
Hello. I was wondering what you were going to pick.
I picked Genie in the House.
Yep.
How was that? Do you remember much about Genie in the House?
I remember that I tried to do RP,
okay,
received pronunciation, like yep. Newsreaders, and everyone thought I was doing Australian. It was one of my first telly jobs.
It was 2008.
Yeah.
So it was the same year as you're on Peep Show, I think.
Oh, right, yeah, so maybe it was
just before Peep Show.
Yeah. Luckily, I didn't try to do Dobby in Australian. Learned my lesson on Genie in the House.
good show, Genie in the House, isn't it? We all remember Genie in the House. Do you and the guys from Genie in the House ever get to get like that? I imagine the improvisation, my dear Mark Watson, you're always...
My dear Mark Watson, they're the number one gang every weekend.
Yeah, act together.
Yeah.
That's such a shame what happened there. I was saying this back to you backstage, but I can't believe it. You've been on before 8 years ago. It's 8 years since you were last on this show, which doesn't seem as possible, but it seems like yesterday to me.
I know. I still remember some of the stuff. I remember you made me put out like 15 matches in my mouth.
I did. Well, I don't think I made you do. I think you probably suggested.
No, you made me.
Did you?
Yeah.
You'd never done it before.
Never done it.
I do it to every guest.
You said if you want to come on this podcast again in 8 years, you've got to put out 15 matches. No, that used to be my party trick to impress boys. Yeah. I don't want to repeat material from 8 years ago. But if anyone wants to, like, it's a really quirky way of getting guys to get off with you. If you can put matches out in your mouth. I found when I was 14.
Did it work a lot for you? I'm not sure that would... I suppose you think if they can... If she can do that with matches, imagine...
What she can do with my...
Dick?
I mean, what, if it's on fire?
If my dick's on fire.
If my dick is on fire, she could... Yeah. I built up, which you may remember, from one match to 15. But then it all backfired. So I used to... It's all to do with confidence, like so many things are... And I could do 15 when I was 15, having built up from one, clasping them all and then just depriving them of oxygen, essentially. And then I tried to do it in Earlsfield when I was about 28, 29, and I couldn't do it, and I just burnt my mouth.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It'd be terrible if that's the way you died.
Yeah, it'd be such a sort of pathetic way. Not even like... trying to do it the first time and failing, trying to repeat something from your teenage years. And, yeah.
Well, I was listening today to your podcast, The Things We Do for Love, which you did four episodes of in 2017. Thought, yeah, and they're good. And you thought, I'll just leave that. And now you're returning to it, and you'll have to 4 years to do some more episodes. So that's good. What I liked about it was I listened to the John Robbins one, which is the first one in which John Robbins is very drunk and very indiscreet.
He's so indiscreet, isn't he?
Just one of the. I was running and I had to stop running. It's the kind of thing. It's the kind of thing people email me to tell me about. They tell me how they were driving. They have to pull over or they're going to die because I'm so funny.
Yeah.
I hope someone listening to that laughed sarcastically and then crashed. That would be great. Oh fuck! Ah! I mean, and those are the people who email you. There must be people who laugh so much they do crash and die,
and they don't find out.
Yeah. And I'd love to know. So if that happens, please text someone and say it was Richard Herring who did this. He killed me. Anyways, but what I think I've done one, of course, because I'm in the new series.
Yes.
We did it remotely. Yeah. I can't remember. But you're very good at getting people to open up. I think you're incredibly good at getting people to open up. But what I really like about it is talking about those. The ridiculous things you especially did as teenagers and, you know, even younger to try and impress the opposite sex.
Yeah.
And it's a very good, I mean, I know you've tapped it, but it's a largely untapped thing because it's, even John sort of in the one he did is too embarrassed really to, he's still cringing with embarrassment.
I think and actually, people think they haven't. And when Nick Helm did it, he was like, I didn't really used to do anything. And then you always find stuff. You're like, oh, yeah, that time I constructed a house out of soda bread because they said they loved it. Oh, yeah, you know, yeah. You remember. Like, yeah, it's weird. I think you bury things as well because you're so embarrassed.
Yeah, well, in this one, which I think you do talk about in your book as well, is that you talk about having made a penguin, a papier-mâché penguin called Roy. To impress someone who was not impressed. It was an attempt to rescue a relationship.
It was an attempt to rescue a relationship, and his favourite animals were penguins. And we'd been to London Zoo, and there was a penguin called Roy who was like a bit slower than the others at getting fish. And we felt really sorry for him because he was always left behind. We remember that his name was called Roy. So I thought, well, how can I save this relationship? And I always had in my mind, like, this is how I've always thought. It's like, if I put enough work in, everything will be all right.
Yeah.
Like, so it was like, if I devote all this time to it, he will carry on going out with me forever. That's the way things work. So I had to... And I never do things by halves. Some people would have made a little penguin, but I was like, right, it's going to be a fucking massive penguin. It was like 6 feet high. It was higher than me. Having never constructed... I'm not anyone who, like, works with their hands. You know, people seem to instinctively know how to do, like, I don't know, work with wire and stuff. And I'm just like... I did ceramics GCSE, actually, but I just put loads of clay through a mincer and made a 3D Weetabix box that, again, was about 6 foot high. Fucking ages. That was my whole GCSE course.
Did you not think about making a ceramic penguin, seeing you had the skill in that area? area.
That's what I do, but I didn't. You've got to have, like, I'd forgotten stuff like how to get air bubbles out of a plane. I didn't have access to a kiln. But that's a very good point. If anyone's thinking of making a penguin with someone and they have access to a kiln,
yes,
that would have been so much better than what I made. But I went to a builder's merchant in East Dulwich, where I lived then, and spent, this is on the first day, like 50 quid on wire. Like a big roll of wire, and I didn't understand how to bend it, so I just left it in the shape of the roll, and I was like, well, that'll have to be his body. And I was glad that the decision had been made for me. I was like, that has to be his body, because I don't understand how to bend it, and it's really stiff, so I can't bend it into any other position. Then I decided to build shelves into his stomach, because as I said, I don't do things by halves. So I built shelves into his stomach, then covered him with papier-mâché. Then I was like, what shall I do with the head? Because it's the most important bit. So I got the light shade down from my light in my room, and I stuffed it with pages of the Daily Mail, which I got free from the newsagent down the road, which presumably meant if he'd come to life, he would have had some really interesting opinions. But he did not. And I stuffed it with... stuffed it with those, covered his face with papier-mâché, and then did the beak. And then his head could go at any angle. And the angle of the head really changed the vibe of Roy. Like, if he looked sad anyway, because his shelves were never used. Never.
No.
But if you put his head on one side, he looked so sad, like really melancholy. But anyway, I had to take him on the bus, and everyone was asking... questions, is it a badger? What are you doing? Where are you going with that? It was like the only time in London people have ever spoken to each other. Yeah. And then I got it to his door, and it was clear. It was just... But the thing is, right, if you do a big romantic... And it's very interesting, what is romance? Is that romantic if he doesn't want the gift? I don't know if it is. I think romance is only romance when both parties find it nice.
Yeah. Well, that's love, isn't it? Love's only nice when both... It's like if it's what is unrequited love.
Yeah, that's true.
Is just stalking. Giving someone a giant penguin they don't want is a strange thing. You know, and from his point of view, this is probably a different story. No, absolutely. She bought me this giant penguin. It was taller than me. She wanted me to keep my DVDs in it. I don't even remember seeing the penguin at the zoo. She kept going on about.
Yeah.
I mean, even Richard Curtis wouldn't put that in one of his, even in his least believable films.
No, and it wouldn't. Would it go into one of those kind of quirky American lo-fi films, do you think, from about 8 years ago, where...
Yeah, it could. What the sort of where the kook, the very very kooky, lovable female protagonist.
Yes,
it could go into one of those.
Mm-hmm. With a kind of geeky guy, and they meet at a house party. She makes him a penguin, and he's made her a donkey at the same time.
Although I still feel she would get it for the wrong. Even in that film, she'd give it to the wrong guy, who would think it was ridiculous.
Yeah,
and then maybe some guy would go, "Hey, I like your gigantic penguin that I can keep things in."
Yes.
Sad penguin. Let's get together.
Yeah.
Maybe that would be it. Maybe you should have waited until you met someone. Maybe you did. I mean, maybe you've been giving this penguin to everyone ever since.
Yes, I took it with me, and then now it's the litmus test. I take them to the zoo. I say, look at that little penguin. He's not getting any fish. Do you want a penguin? Roy stayed in the corner of the room and then watched our sexless relationship dissolve. And then he got put in the attic.
Roy or the boyfriend?
The boyfriend.
Okay.
Roy got put in the attic because the boyfriend moved.
Okay.
And when I appeared on Would I Lie to You, I, with the ex-boyfriend's permission, the producer of Would I Lie to You went to the old flat because they liked the Roy story.
Yeah.
Thought it painted me in a great light, and wanted Roy to appear on Would I Lie to You, which would have been really lovely.
Yeah.
And so the producer went to the flat, and the woman kindly let her in and let her up into the attic, and Roy wasn't there.
Oh my God.
I know.
It had come to life. It's a new film.
The killer papier-mâché penguin.
But imagine like buying that or renting that house out next and discovering that probably someone smashed it to pieces when they thought it was an intruder in their attic.
Yes. a giant crow. Do you know what? If I move, we are going to move later in the year. If I found a papier-mâché penguin in the attic, give me a cheer if you'd love that. One, two, three.
Yeah, my, okay. Don't. These are not a cross-section of society that you should be listening to. They would like it if they found anything in their attic that they could pretend was their friend, these people. You know I love you. Not everyone gets my meanness, though. Some people think I mean it. And yeah, I do. So they are correct. But yeah, it's a very... Why the long gap between... I mean, it's kind of weird to just do four in a series. No, what
I
happened?
Really
did you just have stuff to do, Izzy? Because that's...
Yeah,
I do a podcast every week because I don't have anything to do.
I felt like I kind of conquered podcasts.
Yeah, I think you did.
Four. Who did I do? John Robbins, Nick Helm, Josh Widdicombe and Danielle Ward, I think.
Yes.
Why the gap? Just had other shit to do. I don't know, I had a kid, did I? 2017?
Yeah.
Yeah, I had another kid.
Yeah.
I did, and then we recorded one with Josie, and then she wanted some stuff taken out of it, and then that went on for years where she didn't listen to it, and I didn't listen to it either. No, so we are going to release that. We've just recorded loads, as you said, so... Yeah.
Well, good. I'm glad. I think it's a really good idea. Why do you think you're so... Why is it... I mean, I think maybe it's... Is it just your honesty that once you've talked about that penguin, there's nowhere...
Yeah, I think if you don't say I made a gigantic penguin for someone who was falling out of love with me, you can't expect people to be like, I don't know, drained my own blood into a locket and gave it to them and they didn't want to go out with me anymore. Like, people do admit weird stuff that they've done, and I think that you have to lay yourself on the line too. I don't think it's fair otherwise. Yeah.
But even like, because there's a story in your book, the actual one about when you went for your smear test, the nurse kind of opened up to you about her problems with her own
that
kids.
So I went for my smear test. I had one abnormal smear, which was fine in the end. But I remember, so I always remembered that I had to have smears on Valentine's Day because that was, and I had to have them yearly. So it was also really romantic to go for a smear test on Valentine's Day. But it meant I always remembered to go. So when I went, she said, "When was your last smear?" And I said, "Valentine's Day last year." And then she just ended up, she was telling me about lots of stuff about her family, and there was a lot of stuff going on, and it was like a very sad situation, and she hadn't even started doing the smear at that point. And then I lay down and she got out this laminated sheet of how to do a smear test. And I was thinking, are you really a nurse? Like, and then she did it. But I hadn't worn a skirt, which, girls in the audience, you will know, it's better to wear a skirt during a smear test or you just end up with like a top and your socks on. Like, you're kind of a British man having sex in a Carry-On film. Like, you know, with like a short t-shirt and socks. I was like, what the fuck? So then she started crying. So she hadn't got the thing up. I was lying there naked. She'd looked at the laminated sheet. We've had this heart to heart. I'm sure I must have opened up to her.
Yeah.
Because I do it without thinking. I don't know if the penguin thing had happened then. I think it might have been around that time. Maybe I told her about the penguin and in return she'd opened up to me. We felt very close to each other. And the procedure hadn't begun. And then she started crying. So I got up and hugged her, except I was naked from the waist down. And she was obviously in a nurse's uniform, so it was fine. But I remember thinking, God, if someone walks in now, like, what? How could you explain it? I told her about a penguin. And then the smear took place.
The smear was fine. It was
the smear was fine.
It was all fine. Thank goodness for that. I can't stop thinking about the laminated sheet. It's good to have it laminated for that surgery. You don't want to...
Yeah. So
you just have to keep photocopying it and putting it, printing up a new one.
It's like a greasy menu at a restaurant in Alicante.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like, a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance.
UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Wow!
Nice!
Yeah!
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
So I can't remember, because we did our one last year during lockdown. I can't remember what I said in it even now. I'm sure I said...
Oh, you did say stuff.
Did I say a lot of stuff?
Absolutely. You were great.
Was I?
Yeah.
That doesn't sound good. I'm very private. I like to keep my private life very private, so I don't usually talk about my bollock.
I was thinking about, you know, you're saying you're auctioning it off.
Yeah.
Have I ever told you about the wart on my head?
No, I don't think so.
Okay, so in Edinburgh Festival in 2005, I did the Comedy Zone, which you...
No, I didn't. No, I never did
you
it.
You didn't do it, okay.
Sue did the first one, I think.
The Comedy Zone is a package show. How would you describe it? It's kind of a tricky show,
it is
it?
Difficult, yeah. So it's three acts and a compere, I think. So it's like trying to recreate a London club, but it's on quite late. And usually in the cabaret bar, it used to be at the Pleasant, so it was quite a difficult gig.
Yes, I found it very hard. I'd only just got 20 minutes of stand-up, and it a large part of it was a story about a squirrel biting my hand, which I admit didn't really have an ending. And that was the year that I'd got paid 20 quid to get off by a guy who heckled from the back and said, I hate you so much, I'll give you 20 quid. Yes. Now, in that same year, a wart, I think, through stress... began to develop on my forehead, and I thought it was a spot, and then it got the appearance of like a tiny cauliflower with amazingly intricate like leaves on it. Like, it was sort of beautiful, but I was like, better grow a fringe. And it got bigger and bigger, and we were walking along, and Anna Crilly, who is a great actress and did stand up then, we walked along, and she said, you've got a bee on your head. And I said, no, it's a wart, because by that point I'd realised it wasn't a spot. Then Ed Weeks said, you've got a bee on your head. I was like, no, it's not a fucking bee. It's a wart that looks like a cauliflower. Anyway, so I ended up going to King's College Hospital, and it had to be burnt off with acid.
Right.
So a guy put acid on a stick and applied it.
Even the doctors wouldn't touch it. It was that gross.
Exactly. It's like a 6 foot long stick he'd got from his garden. Get out, you're cursed. And he said, it's going to turn black, it's going to look like a Rice Krispie, and it's going to fall off. And that is what happened. So it died effectively, but it was still attached to my head. And I went and did this gig in Porthcawl, which was a really hard gig if you were English. I have to admit, it was a nice audience, but they sometimes gave you a bit of a hard time. And I died horribly. And Mark Olver was comparing. And I sort of did my 20 minutes, and it was very unpleasurable for everyone involved. And then I did a mock bow at the end, and the wart fell off. And it was like a metaphor for how bad the evening was. So then Mark Olver went back on and picked it up. He touched it.
Yeah, right.
And he put it into a sherry glass. And he auctioned it off so that something good had come of my trip to Wales.
I find it quite offensive that you think that's similar to a testicle. I have to say that is in any way equal to the struggle I've been through, the cancer that I've had to endure this year. So I'm very offended by it. by that story. Anyway, so those will be, by the time this goes out, those, the your series, will they, is it, are you going to drop them all at once, or are they going out weekly?
I can't remember. No. Our producer knows.
He'll know.
Yeah.
Ben? Three in the first week and then weekly. I just got... I felt that. I can just communicate telepathically with him from anywhere in the world. Your producer, for some reason. We share a producer. That's very good. Well, it's a strong recommend, and you'll find out some stuff about me, apparently, that I genuinely have no idea what...
Really, that's the good thing. You can't remember.
And what was nice about the first series was obviously all recorded with an audience, and you get the kind of audience involved, and you get some great... It was just... That first one especially, just endless story after story, everything that was coming out. I don't know how much you record to get that, but it just felt like... You know.
No, it was, yeah, when the audience got involved, it was good. It was like Trisha seeking a better. I went on Trisha once, and I I did a play called Frog in Love in Norwich in 2003, and I had never been on telly, and I was like, I want to get on telly, and I don't care what I'm doing. And Trisha was filmed in Norwich, so I made me, the frog, and the rat go to Trisha. They're the other cast members, not my nicknames for them. That's what they played. And we went, and it was a reunion show. Anyway, it just reminds me, they get the audience to talk in Trisha. And I talked in that Trisha show.
Wow. I mean, if I'd known about that, that could have been what you were best known for.
Oh, yes! Well, next time, when I do the next one in 8 years, yeah, when I'm 50, you can say...
Don't say 50, like I'm 54 by the time this goes out. I'm 54 years old. And that, Boris Johnson's just ruined the big birthday party that I had planned for my... That's a shame.
Oh, no, really?
No, I didn't have a birthday. My last birthday was good. I went round, it was slightly been relaxed, and we could go round to my in-laws, and we played Viking Cubs, which is like a game where you throw bits of wood at other bits of wood. Amazing. And it was one of the best birthdays I've had. I think when you get in your 50s, you don't feel like celebrating. But I didn't even do anything for my 50th.
Didn't you?
No, I didn't. I really didn't feel like doing anything for my 50th. Yeah. Whereas I did for my 40th. Did you do anything for your 40th?
Well, I was pregnant and I couldn't tell anyone. So, and then I was going to do something for my 41st. Then I had a baby, so I didn't.
Yeah.
And then last year I was 42 and it was lockdown. So maybe this August.
Yeah,
I don't know, though. I don't know. I've never been a big party thrower. I like going to parties, but I hate feeling the responsibility for people having a good time.
I've enjoyed the enforced not having to socialise thing. I'm glad that I can't come to anything. And then now it's good. I've said this before, but once you've had cancer and people ask you to do stuff, you can go, oh, sorry, I've had cancer. And then they go, oh, God, I'm sorry for... I've got so many people asking me to do podcasts, and I go... Thing is, I've just had cancer. Oh, I'm sorry. I'm so sorry. I'm fine. I'm as fitter than I've ever been in my life. I just don't want to do your podcast. But it's great you get that. Really, I don't know how long I can milk it for.
I think you can milk it forever now. I had cancer 50 years ago. I still don't want to do your fucking podcast. In fact, that could be a podcast. How long can you milk the cancer thing for?
Well, I'm good. I'm definitely going to milk it. I milked that bollock while it was here. I'm going to certainly milk it. Certainly milk it now it's gone. I'm going to ask you some new emergency questions. I've got some new ones. I'm writing a new book of emergency questions.
Okay.
So I'm going to try out some of the new ones on you. Even I don't remember what I've written here. I've just got a document here with the newest ones. I'll come down the bottom and see what's down there. Let's try this one. Would you rather be happy, grumpy, sleepy, bashful, sneezy, dopey, or some kind of unspecified doctor? All lowercase. I'm not asking which dwarf you'd like to be. I'm asking which...
Okay.
Which of those...
Who would choose to be grumpy?
Well, he's all right.
Some people would.
Yeah. Some people do choose to be grumpy.
Yeah, they really do. They love it. Happy, grumpy, bashful?
Bashful, sleepy, sneezy... Dopey, or some kind of unspecified doctor.
I think some kind of unspecified doctor.
I think that would be good.
Yeah.
And never specify what you can do.
Oh, never.
No. Okay. That was not a good question.
I'd be interested to see who chose sneezy. Because I think that's quite... if that was your main trait, if that was on your gravestone, you wouldn't have led a great life. They were sneezy.
Yeah. I don't know how Sneezy got through. I did do a sketch years ago on As It Occurs to Me about the genuine names that they. If you go to Wikipedia, they had about 40 names that they considered.
Oh,
so how didn't
they?
Sneezy got through? One of them was Titsy, which I think would have loved to see Titsy the dwarf. God. I presume Titsy means something else, but I hope they played it just a Titsy dwarf. Why not? Okay, how about this? Would you rather co-own a car with Jimmy Carr, a lorry with Laurie Anderson, or a van with Van Morrison?
Wow, that's great.
Okay.
Okay, well, I think Jimmy Carr would have a very good car.
Yeah.
But I think he'd probably be using it a lot, and I'd feel under pressure to keep it clean. and our car has got moss growing on the... Our car's still like the kind of car that we had as stand-ups 15 years ago, right. Even though we've got two kids now. It's got a flower and a blade of grass growing out of the windscreen, nice. Which have now been taken off because it went through a car wash. But the moss has not been taken off by the car wash, and it's growing along every window.
Yeah.
And it got burgled the other day. Someone went along the road and stole stuff from every car, and we only noticed about an hour into the journey. Like, it's so messy. So I feel like Jimmy Carr and I wouldn't really co-own a car very well. So a lorry with Laurie Anderson. I'm not a very confident driver. I don't think I'd like driving a lorry.
Okay.
I don't think the mirrors business would go down very well with me. So it would have to be... the third one.
The van with Van Morrison.
Yeah, the van with Van Morrison. I reckon I could drive a van. I saw Van Morrison perform once at an outdoor venue in Cheshire. It was perfectly nice.
He chooses to be grumpy though, doesn't he?
Yeah, he does.
Yeah.
But then if I'm an unspecified doctor, maybe I could cure him.
You could cure him. All right, I'll do one more and then we'll move back to proper questions. I'm just trying these out. We're just seeing how they go. I'm sure there were some good ones. Let me see if I can find one of the good ones. I've wrote loads this week, didn't I? Oh, shit, I've got to do so many. I felt like... I want to know the answer to this question. Would you rather eat a full Christmas dinner for every meal every day or eat a medium-sized Easter egg every 2 hours for the rest of your life?
Oh, my God.
You'd have to finish the Christmas dinner each time. The amount of food on the plate would be ratified by an independent Christmas dinner expert to be of an average Christmas dinner size, and they'd also determine what items were in the dinner. You'd still have to eat Easter eggs at night time, so you would need to set your alarm to go off every 2 hours. You would not be required to eat the sweets that come with the Easter egg, only the egg itself, but you could eat the sweets if you wanted. Yeah. You'd be allowed to eat other food if you wished on the Easter egg option, but not on the Christmas dinner.
But not on the Christmas dinner option. Okay. So that's Christmas dinner 3 times a day.
Yeah.
I do love Christmas dinner.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I think it might get a bit much. Weirdly.
Yeah.
I think it definitely would. Call me insane.
It gets a bit much at Christmas, doesn't
yes,
it?
Yes, it does. After one go at it. It Easter eggs. I mean, what girl doesn't love chocolate? But would I like to eat it every 2 hours? I mean, setting the alarm for 2 hours every night reminds me of having to pump milk when I had newborns. And I got to watch episodes then of box sets.
Yep.
So, I mean, if I had to get up every 2 hours in the night, presumably I'd get a lie-in. I wouldn't have to do the morning with the kids.
You'd have to get up every 2 hours and you'd have to eat Easter eggs every 2 hours. It's 12 Easter eggs a day. I mean, I'm talking that's the size.
Medium size.
Yeah, medium, not the big ones. I'm not insane. No.
Yeah.
But also not the 99p ones. The ones that cost about $3.99.
Yes, I know what you mean. Yeah. Where you get like one small packet of like chocolate buttons inside.
Yeah,
Not a mug though.
You probably wouldn't get a mug. Often the mug comes with a slightly smaller Easter egg because they feel that you're getting the value from the mug.
Yeah, that's true. I think I'd go for the Easter egg.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
How long do you think you'd live? I mean, an either option, really.
I guess, how long would you live with the Christmas dinner? Well, Christmas dinner, you'd put on weight, I imagine.
Yeah.
But...
You don't feel you would with the 12 Easter eggs today.
you would. But with Christmas dinner, you'd be getting lots of fruit and veg. Probably, you've got Brussels sprouts, carrots, peas. Do you have with your Christmas dinner sometimes?
Not peas for Christmas dinner.
Okay. Carrots,
parsnips,
though,
carrots.
Parsnips.
Lots of different types of potato.
Cauliflower? Okay, this is a good game. Broccoli?
No broccoli.
Okay. We have broccoli sometimes.
Cranberry sauce?
Oh, no, I don't like cranberry sauce. Okay. Yeah, this ratified by
the
an
ratified
independent...
The ratified guy would definitely put that
in. Is that you, that person?
No, it's not me. We're independent.
Okay.
I'm not a Christmas dinner expert. I can't even think of all the things that go into it right now. Turkey?
Yeah.
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 But you'd be getting at least, I'd say, four or five veg. No, fruit every day.
Yeah.
I reckon you'd live forever.
Yeah. I think it's healthier than Easter eggs.
Easter eggs, you'd be getting no fruit or veg, no protein apart from the milk in the chocolate. I reckon you'd live for maybe a year and a half.
Yeah. My kids would definitely go for that. My kids would happily eat chocolate all the time. I wonder how long it would take even a child to go, this is too much.
I think a really long time.
A really long time. Right, let's get back to talking about you. You have a new novel out. Let's talk about that, which will be out, again, hopefully round about the same time as this podcast goes out. So if you're listening at home, go and check wherever you get your books from. And if you're listening in the audience, you can pre-order stuff. It's out there to get. It's very good. I've been reading it. It's called Jane is Trying. It's not really about you. It feels like from the cover. I don't know if the cover's the cover. It looks like you on
it
the
cover. It
looks
like me, upside down.
Yeah.
Yeah, but she's got red hair.
Yeah.
Yeah. I know. I think they might have based, the cover designer might have done it from a photo of me, but no, it's not about me. We've got a few things in common, but no, it's not. It's not about me.
So was that a deliberate choice to go away? Because you've obviously done biographical shows and
last
book.
The first book was about my 20s, wasn't it? And kind of about like all the escapades I got up to and lots of like sex and lots of making penguins and stuff. And then I met my partner and settled down and had kids. And then he was like, oh, you don't mention me in the first book. And I said, oh, that's because I'm going to write a second book about you and how happy I am. And then I realised that it's really boring to read about people being happy. And there's no jeopardy. The biggest jeopardy now is like, who's going to take the bins out? So I think that's why it gets harder to write stand-up as you get older, because you're kind of doing less kind of fun stuff in a sense.
Sure.
So I thought, and actually it really appealed to me writing a novel, and I preferred it, although it was harder, because the other thing about writing about real people is, like with the first book, there were a lot of things where I thought, would this person be upset if they read this? And sometimes I had to change their name. And then with a novel, you can basically put real people in it, but change their gender or their name and then be like, they had a big moustache. Jenny will never guess it was her. And then put in real stuff.
Sure.
So I liked that.
It's very good.
Thank you.
It's very funny.
Can I use that?
You can. You can put this on the cover.
It's very good.
Yeah. It's very good. It's like a proper book. You know, and as a comedian, and we've gigged together, you kind of think, you know, we're just comedians, we're just messing around. I mean, I know you've always had this ability to write. You write very poetic stand-up, really, as well, but you've also done these radio shows and stuff. But, it's a proper novel, but it's also, unusually for a novel, properly, the jokes in it are properly funny and, make you laugh properly, which isn't very usual for novels. I have to say, even ones that think they're funny. So it's a very, very enjoyable read. So it's about a woman going back to leaving a cheating partner to go back to live with her parents.
Yeah.
And I don't want to give too much away. There's some nice twists and stuff in it, so I don't want to give any too much away. But she's going back to sort of where you grew up, though, right?
Yeah, she's going back to a place like Matlock, where I'm from, in the Peak District. But I changed it. At one point, I was saying it's near, like, Stafford. And then Ellis just said, just make it near Matlock. Like, Ruth Jones doesn't write about Bristol. She writes about Wales. Like, kind of, it's that weird thing where I was trying to come away from the thing that I think I probably write best, which is that small town stuff that goes on. And so I have made it a slightly different place. It's a kind of mixture of Matlock and a place near it. And she gets a job in a bookshop. And she's quite snobby, really, isn't she, about going back from London to this small town, and her parents are very overprotective, which my dad isn't with us anymore, but my mum, they're not really. It was really fun to write these parents who were like always making her do stuff. And
But it's that interesting thing, I think, of that idea of going back home and feeling like that's a failure, because it's a backward step in a way, but also then obviously there's people who she knows who stayed in that same place the whole time, which is in my Radio 4 sitcom, it's a sort of similar thing. My sister has lived almost next door to my parents nearly a whole life. She doesn't anymore, but pretty much just around the corner. And I've been out, and you go back and you're kind of, trying to work out which is the better life, really, because it's not all, the escaping isn't always happy, isn't in this case.
And also, I think so many people in the past year have started thinking about moving away from London or where they've been living. So it feels a bit more pertinent, I suppose, because of that, which wasn't intentional because I started it long before COVID.
Right.
Long before. Sure. It's taken about 4 years, really.
Right. I mean, it's hard writing books, right? I mean, it's
Yeah, I think what's hard as well is you get your deadline and then it's kind of arbitrary, really, or it has always been to me. I don't know if the publisher would feel the same. 18 years later, can we have our fucking advance back? But, like, other stuff comes in, doesn't it?
Yeah.
And you go, oh, God, I'll do it next week, so I've got to do this thing now. So actually, in a way, having my second child was a reason for me to finish it because I thought this is a good time to write because I can't really... I'm going to take a bit of time off and then I'm going to take things a bit more easy than I did with my first kid,
sure.
work-wise. So, yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
Well, it's very good. And I hope you're going to... If you're writing more, have you already got
some... Hopefully, yeah. I don't know. I think we'll have to see how this one goes with Ryan, who are the publishers. And then I have got an idea for a young adult book, so I need to... I think it's probably a good idea to start thinking about the next book before I promote this one.
Right.
Do you know what I mean?
I do.
My mum always said that to me with relationships. She was like, before you finish the relationship, I mean, it's so presumptuous to think I'd be the one. Darling, before you finish the relationship, always have the next one lined up. Like, that was always genuinely her advice.
Right.
Like, don't kind of have all your eggs in one basket. So I kind of think that's good with work stuff, not to just be focused on one thing. So I think hopefully while I'm promoting this in July...
Yeah.
I'll be thinking about the next thing.
I've sort of felt this year that, right, you know, but I sort of hate writing. I mean, I have got to write a couple of books. But there's a part of me thinks that would be quite a nice way just to sort of see out however long's left, just to sit at home and write books.
What, you mean for the rest of your life?
Yeah.
Like, the thing is, though, do you do this thing that I do where you imagine, when you imagine yourself writing, you imagine yourself at a rusty old typewriter gazing out on a snowy scene. But then the actuality is that you've maybe snatched an hour while the kids are fighting in the living room and you've got to bang out 1,000 words in 20 minutes. That was what I found.
Yeah, well, I'm very bad at sitting down on the chair. Once I'm sitting down on the chair and I'm stuck to the chair... Maybe I should try literally sticking myself to the chair. Then I am quite good, but it's all the waiting around trying to get to the chair that I find difficult. So.
Everyone does, definitely, yeah.
But then the impetus of the deadline sort of works for me. Though I agree with books, it is a bit elastic.
Yeah,
it's more elastic. I guess when you're writing TV scripts and radio scripts, there's usually a broadcast date or there's people waiting for the scripts.
Yeah.
To do their part of the job. So you've kind of got to be a bit better with those, though not everyone is. I want to talk about Matlock. Did you ever see Simon Groom around in Matlock?
Is Simon Groom from Blue Peter?
Yeah.
No, but I know that he's from there.
Yeah.
No. The most famous person I ever saw in Matlock was, we saw Take That.
Right.
They came to play Matlock Bath Illuminations Roadshow.
Okay.
In 1991. Or 1991.
Yeah.
And I didn't really understand. I thought they were kind of buskers because the only other live music that I'd seen was busking in Derby. So when they'd finished and Jason Orange leant on an amp and sang a song to me, just looking at me, I think, it was weird. He just picked me out of the crowd. And so to say thank you at the end, I took the pound coin out of my pocket that my dad had given me for chips and threw it at his head. But I didn't mean for it to hit him on the head. It was like me thinking, oh, you know, they've come all the way out here from Stoke to do this gig. I've got to say thank you. And he looked really surprised that someone had thrown a pound at him.
That's probably why he left. That's why he's not in Take That anymore, is he? It was probably that pound incident. I'm not, why have I get a pound thrown at me again? Poor old Jason Orange.
It's better to throw notes, isn't it, than coins?
Yeah, I think to Take That, probably don't give them any cash. I think to them, getting cash is probably an insult. If people start throwing money... Actually, no, I'd be happy if people start throwing... I was going to say...
Yeah, that'd be great.
It would be really good.
Better than knickers or, you know, what do people throw at bands or knickers, bras?
Yeah.
That's
I'd take those. I mean, not so much from this lot.
When I was in bands, like when I was in so many bands when I was at school.
Yeah.
One of my first live gigs, we got lit fags and full cans of beer thrown at us. It was so bad. or the audience was so mean. Yeah.
Oh, it's still nice to get beer.
You know. Yeah, what? Exactly. They were throwing, maybe they wanted to give us beer.
Yeah.
And fags.
Yeah. They just didn't know how to react like you were. Take that. What is the naughtiest thing you did in Hall Lees Park? In Matlock, that is, for people who aren't from Matlock.
Oh, I think it's probably... Yeah, it's jumping off the bridge.
Okay.
Yeah.
Into some water?
I jumped off the bridge into some water. I was going across the bridge. There are two bridges in Hall Lees Park. Yeah. I jumped off the one that is less high. But it's still pretty high. It's about as high as this balcony.
Oh, it's high.
Yes.
For people at home, that's quite... Imagine something quite high. I think we've got it.
And we were walking along and I was... And I was one of those kids that if people say jump, I say how high, and they say off a bridge. And it was raining, and my friend said that her brother had jumped into the river from the bridge the other day and swam around, and it was really cool.
Right.
And because it was raining, the river looked a lot deeper, and it wasn't. So I sat on the top of the bridge for a bit, and everyone said, go on, do it. And so I jumped, and I had bright red hair then... died, and I landed with my foot at right angles to my ankle, my left foot, and broke the ankle immediately. Because my hair was red and it was raining and I'd landed in the water, my hair was all in my eyes, and I was like, my eyes are bleeding. Like, I can only see blood. And then someone said, your hair's in your eyes. And then I was so relieved that my eyes weren't bleeding. I sort of tried to walk on the ankle because I was so full of adrenaline that it became clear. And someone wheeled me home on their skateboard. And then my mum went absolutely crazy. And I had to be in plaster for a while. And then I lay on the sofa and watch Wimbledon for a whole summer because it happened at the beginning of summer. And then I wanted to be a tennis player. And I berated my parents for not recognising my talents as a tennis player earlier. But really all I did was, I don't know if you did this as well when you were younger, but all I did was plan out how I'd be really funny on the tennis court. Like none of the actual moves. And then I went with my friend and played and it was shit. And I was shit. And I was like, oh, I don't want to be a tennis player anymore. It's a very short-lived change of ambition. Yeah.
Wow. That was a good question. I must ask that to everyone.
What's the naughtiest thing you've done in Hall Lees Park?
Yeah.
I did a lot of naughty things in that park.
I bet you did. That's what I thought. I just think it's... There was Cheddar Gorge in Cheddar where we did fairly naughty things, but I was never very naughty.
Yeah.
We drank cider when it got really naughty, I was too scared to go. I was a very cautious and goody-goody child.
Yeah, so you remember you saying that on my podcast that you were actually, you were kind of...
Well, like my friends all came, I'm going to dob them in now, they all came up with the idea, there was a wishing well in up the gorge, would like people would throw money into it, like it, but it wasn't like an official thing. It just had loads of coins at the bottom, and they came up with the idea of going there one night and just diving in and getting loads of the coins. And I said I wouldn't do it because I was scared of getting caught and dying. I think not for any reason.
That's totally fair enough.
That we were stealing from charity, but they did. They nearly got caught. I think they got like about 50p each out of there.
God.
But so they would do naughty things, but I when it got too naughty, if it was silly, I would do it. But
yes, but
my dad was my headmaster. I had to behave.
Yeah,
but I was a very square kid. I didn't take drugs. We drank. That's all we did. We drank from a young age. Was there a lot of teenage drinking in Matlock?
Oh God, yeah.
I imagine Matlock's taking lots of drugs, or people would take lots of drugs.
Yeah.
In Hall Lees Park.
Yeah, it's a sort of, because there's not much to do. Yeah. But I imagine it's the same.
I think it was the same in Cheddar. I was just too...
You were just on the outside
too,
of it.
Too square.
Yeah, no, lots of that. And but a sort of very hippie-ish, creative place. Like, it was a good, really good place to grow up. Yeah, lots of magic mushrooms growing in nearby fields and stuff.
I mean, there was loads of that.
Yeah.
There was loads of that. I don't know how I avoided drugs until my mid-30s.
You made up for it.
Didn't really. I never really fancied drugs, and then I had some in the end just to see. They still didn't like it very much.
Yeah, well, good for you.
Good for me. Don't take drugs, kids. You guys there. Worried about you too. According to the net worth website on the internet, have you seen these net worth websites?
Oh, net worth, yeah.
It's interesting. They hedge their bets. They obviously don't know who most people are, and most people get the same... basic income, a guess of their income, which is usually quite wrong. But what's interesting about yours, I found 2019 and 2020, and it says in 2019, your net worth was $50,000 to $2 million.
Okay.
And in 2020, though, it was $100,000 to $5 million. What happened in 2020 to double your income? Your income definitely doubled during the pandemic. Were you a friend of Matt Hancock? And you said, what happened?
You
could have up to $5 million, American dollars.
How did it know?
That's so hedging your bets.
I love it.
50K to 2 million.
I love it. No, I'm not a secret friend of Matt Hancock. No. I've never met him.
Did you have a good 2020 financially speaking?
I did some voiceovers, but they only kept me ticking over. I was very grateful. Did them from the wardrobe. Told Ellis to fuck off on a Zoom call in front of loads of people from an ad agency while I was at the beginning of... Did anyone else... people must identify with this. You know, at the beginning when it was like everyone was suddenly working from home and all these things that you realised that you've relied on, like technology for us, were just gone.
Yeah.
And I'm so bad with technology. I'm awful. And the work... I actually think I might go on a course at the library of how to... Like, I'm not joking. I didn't know until reasonably recently that you could have more than one computer tab open. I used to put the new address into the one page every time. I mean, I am awful and I panic and get stressed really easily. And I had to do this voiceover from under the ironing board, covered in a duvet, with both kids in, both crying. And Ellis was trying to teach me how to use this mic. And in front of loads of people from the ad agency on Zoom, I told him to fuck off. And then I had to get him back because I didn't know how to work the mic. So, but luckily they used me again. So, yeah, but no, I mean, I'm sorry to say that the voiceovers did not amount to that much of a gain.
Do you think you weren't between $100,000 and $5 million, or do you think...
No.
What is net worth, though? Is net worth... That's not how much you earn, that's how much you've got.
I think net worth is probably how much you've got if you sold everything, the value of your house and...
You've got 100K, American, US dollars.
What's dollars?
I mean, it's about the same now, thanks to Brexit, but, you know, it's...
So have I got 100K if I include our house?
If you sold your house and, you know, the kids' organs and stuff. And your own organs, but go for the kids first.
Yes, we've got,
So it's right.
Yes, it is correct.
Or would you say you got over $5 million?
No, I would not say that.
Okay, so it's right. Yeah. So we can trust those. That Vegas. They've got between 0 and 5,000 billion pounds. What? I like the way they put in little... They try to put in little facts to make them it look like... And some of them don't know. Don't know how tall they are or how old they are. Anyway, It's there. How did you get on in House of Games and Pointless Celebrities? I'd like to know, because I...
House of Games I really enjoyed.
Yeah.
I find it really funny that it's all filmed in one day and you have to take a massive suitcase of clothes.
Yeah.
It was in
Glasgow?
It was not in Glasgow. It was in London. Okay. It was in the middle of lockdown and we weren't like allowed to touch each other at all. So, like... That sounds dodgy. So there was no hair and makeup and I realised how reliant I am on the other people to sort of do my makeup when I appear on telly, and so that was weird because I was like, I remember saying at one point to the makeup lady, shall I just do this thing to my hair, shall I tip my head upside down, and she was like, no. I really like doing that. Pointless Celebrities, I think that's the second time I've done it.
Have you won? Did you win? Are we allowed?
And we got to the, I can't remember.
Okay.
I did it once with Alex Horn and I think we got knocked out immediately.
What, you and Alex Horn?
Yeah.
Was it your fault?
It was a joint loss.
Okay, good. We haven't got too much longer, but there's a lot to talk about. So I'm going to talk about... because since I've seen you, you've done loads of stuff. You did Man Down. You did the last series of Man Down. Did you ever work with Luke Skywalker on that?
No.
No.
Stephen Berkoff.
Yeah, there were some big names...
Yeah.
Not even in Peep Show, but people have gone on to win Oscars and stuff from Peep Show.
Yeah.
So you've worked with some pretty important names. How did you find A Man Down?
Oh, I really loved it. But I know Greg, I know Greg, I suppose, already.
Yeah.
And was Mike Wozniak. But yeah, I really liked it. I sort of always forget how tall Greg is, don't you?
Yeah, he's very tall.
How, when you stand next to him, do you have to look up?
Well, there's a photo, and we just put this podcast back up. There's the photo from the dressing room of me and him, and everyone says, yeah, you must be sitting down, and I'm genuinely not sitting down. He's over a foot taller than I am.
Yeah, it's...
And it looks like ridiculous, but it looks like he's 10 feet taller than I am in the photo. Maybe I am sitting down.
There's a great photo of him and Lucy Porter online. Yeah. If you Google Greg Davis, Lucy Porter, and I think she's literally maybe like a third of the size of him. It's fantastic. Yeah. But yeah, no, it was really, really fun.
Yeah.
And the director's lovely. And like, I haven't got anything bad or gossipy to say about that show.
Yeah. It's a shame that it's not come back.
I know, they left it on a cliffhanger with him in prison.
Right.
And I thought, it must mean it's coming back, but I don't know.
Well, maybe it will come back. I mean, he's quite busy.
He's very busy.
I mean, you're quite busy as well. You did Damned with Joe Brand.
Yeah.
Which I think I saw Kevin Eldon, the actor Kevin Eldon's in that, and lots of people.
Yeah.
But did that only get one series?
It got two.
Did it?
Yeah. And then I don't know if that'll go. I don't think that'll go again.
No.
But, when things get cancelled, you always get that thing, don't you, where everyone's like, we're going to fight, we're going to send it to, we're going to take it to HBO, and then it kind of,
I mean, I think the problem is that there's so many shows now, there's so many sitcoms, and it's so hard to get that impetus going to carry on, because I think like even 10, maybe 20 years ago, there'd be a few, and you would get, you'd be given a couple of series, and then maybe given another one as you know, now it feels like, there's so many things. There'll just be a new one. They'll move on.
But you'd think because there are more channels that things would get more of a chance, but it actually has the opposite effect.
Yeah. Well, yeah, and not enough people are seeing it. And you're also in a Wallace and Gromit video game, right?
Yeah, it's like an interactive phone app. I love the way you said that to me. You're also in
But you're not. Yeah. You're not in one of the... You're not, because I think you. I think you could be in a Wallace and Gromit film with you as a live-action puppet.
Oh, my God, I'd love that.
Don't you think so?
Because
I think you look quite... You look like you belong in the Wallace and... I mean, this is a great compliment. I think I could see you acting alongside puppets, and it's not like you're live-action, it's you're one of the puppets.
Do you mean like me, like I'm a puppet, or do you mean like me appearing as me?
I mean you as you... Being a puppet.
But like playing a puppet, or like someone makes a puppet of me.
No, you are the puppet. All the rest is puppets and stop frame animation. And you could just
act.
Me
just like, I'd love
I think you look
that.
quite Wallace. You could fit into the Wallace and Gromit universe.
That's the nicest thing you've ever said to me.
That's an insult. What is Gromit like in real life?
Well, I did my lines in a studio alone. Yeah.
And he doesn't speak.
He doesn't speak.
Yeah, so you didn't get...
Yeah, he was next to me, they were very nice.
Yeah.
All the people involved in that.
Yeah, but they're a lovely... I mean, we've had Peter Lord on the show, and I because they're Bristol guys.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I've been down there quite a lot. I know quite a lot of the guys there. Still, I haven't even been in a fucking video. I haven't even been in one of their stupid adverts. I'm a load of pricks. I got given a free morph. That's the only thing that's happened to me, and then it fell apart.
And so, you've had cancer.
And I've had cancer, and they still haven't. The last time I saw Peter Lord, he said, "You've got such an interesting voice. You should do. You'd be great to be in one of our films." I went,
"Yeah, that's
What a lovely observation, Peter. Do you want to follow up on that?" Fucking prick. I'd like, but that's an exciting thing to be involved.
Oh, I loved it. And actually, they've made a, what, so you might be able to tell I'm really bad with technology, but what are they called, the things that they are? Are they puppets?
They're stop frame animation figurines, I guess. But I think puppets is fine, yeah.
They made a puppet of, so Lily, which is the character that I play, it really looks like me. Yeah. And it sort of made me realise that, you're perhaps right.
You've got just quite a Wallace and Gromit mouth, I think. I mean, that's all it is, just like...
And also, I can do, like... You know, in the era of putting matches out in my mouth, there were loads of things that I used to do to, like, test guys to see if they still fancied me after I did... Like, the matches thing actually was, a cool thing to do, not a test. But stuff like I could at one point make myself have 8 double chins. And I can try and do it now if you want.
Yes.
I feel like it's quite Wallace and Gromit-y. I don't know if it'll be 8, but this is what I used to do.
It's good.
Thanks.
Yeah, that's why I think they could have saved some money.
Yeah.
Because the thing, the stop frame animation is really expensive. If they just got people to be in it, exactly. They just find cartoonish looking people
they're really
and a weird dog.
Trick.
Yeah. Then they wouldn't have to spend all the time going. Idiots. They're idiots in many ways. And you can do it just on a computer really quickly now. I don't know what's wrong with these guys.
And famously, dogs will do whatever you want.
They will, yeah. Stay still. Can I take a photo now? But just move your ear quizzically. That'd be good. Well, that's very exciting. So is that game out?
That's out, yeah.
Have you played
it? Yes, it's an interactive... It's very cool. Like, yeah. my allergy to technology means that I don't understand some of it, but I think it's probably really understandable to people who use these interactive apps. But it's a bit like, kind of a little bit like Pokemon. You have to look for things, you have to solve a mystery. And,
okay.
Yeah.
Good.
Great.
I'm going to look out for that. Right, yeah. Well, look. You've got the book coming up, Jane is Trying. You've got the podcast, The Things We Do for Love. Is there anything... you were going to go back to stand-up in 2020, which was a poor time to make that decision, as it turned out.
Yes, I did like three gigs and then COVID happened. I will. I think I'll write a new show.
Sure.
Yes, I will. I really, really miss it.
Yes.
Yes.
Well, it's good, that, because I think it can be... You can get distracted by other things, and you're so successful in everything you do, and you do all these different things, and you are great... You're always just such... I mean, we gigged a lot together in the mid-2000s.
Yeah,
a lot. And it was always interesting and funny. And sometimes, as you say, the audience didn't get it. And that was even better.
Oh, they were the best nights.
But no, there was always something... there's some people you see and you go, okay.
Yeah, yeah.
There's nothing there. Like, I was talking about that. The guy who was... There's this guy complaining on Chortle recently about how he'd lost work because he was a white, able-bodied, heterosexual man, and that had lost him work. And you kind of go, there's a lot of guys, if you think that you should be losing work because there's a lot of guys doing the same sort of thing. And if you are a white, able-bodied, heterosexual man, you have to find the thing
that makes you
bookable. So, because no one wants to see a whole night of that anymore, which they did in the past. But that it was always quirky and it was always going to be a different thing. So, is it going to be sort of storytelling you're going back to? Do you think, or is it
maybe? I did have an idea about when you scribble an idea down and then you read it the next day and you're like, what the fuck was that? There were two signs next to each other in Beckenham Place car park, which is a park near me, and one was that a ring had been lost and another was that a ring had been found. And I thought it was lovely. Basically, the idea was something coming off the back of that and me. What I quite like doing is working from one small thing like that and then working outwards, starting with something that's happened and then kind of embroidering it.
Sure.
Yeah.
Oh, well, that sounds brilliant. Is there anything else? I mean, there's enough there to be getting.
There's something that I'm filming at the moment, but I don't know if I can really say anything about it. But that'll be out. That'll be out next year.
Yeah.
But I'll tweet about it when I can.
Is it a TV thing or a film?
Yeah, it's a TV thing.
Is it a new series of Peep Show?
No.
Okay. Is it the new series of Man
Down? The thing is, we'll all get so old to do Peep Show. Imagine if in 10 years they said, okay, you can have another series of Peep Show. We'd just all be taking heart tablets, wouldn't we? Moaning about millennials. Yeah.
And Olivia Colman would be swanning around.
We'd get her back for maybe one scene, wouldn't we? She'd have someone else playing her and shot from behind the whole time. Then she'd come in for,
Oh, well, good. Well, we'll watch out for that. Ladies and gentlemen, please give a massive round of applause to the wonderful Izzy City. Thank you very much. Come back next week. We'll be here with No Such Thing as a Fish. Thank you very much. See you in a bit. You have been listening to Rahulastapa with me, Richard Herring, and my guest, Izzy Sooty. The music is by Scant Regard. I am indebted to my producer, Ben Walker. I'm indebted to my friend, director, and all-round good guy, Chris Evans. Not that one. That one's not a good guy, is he? He's not the other one. The other one is a good guy. You know. Research is by Kathleen McKeegan at Rahulastapa, rahulastapa.com. And this is a Sky Potato Fuzz and GoFasterStrike.com production. Go to GoFasterStrike.com/badges to become a monthly badger. Get all kinds of benefits and bonus material.
to enjoy, and lots of privileges for your £3 a month.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
On Formative, middle school kids from New York City public schools interview a phenomenal collection of grown-ups.
Me, like, I don't know what I want to do.
You don't have to have all the answers.
I feel like a lot of people's favorite topics are, like, interest in their life.
That is a really good answer.
The podcast where the leaders of today are interviewed by leaders of tomorrow. Listen now at newyorkedge.org/formative or wherever you get your podcasts.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Thanks for listening. Go to gofasterstripe.com for all your Rich Herring download and book needs. Go to richherring.com/gigs to find out if Can I Have My Ball Back is coming near to you. And please listen to as many podcasts on this feed as you possibly can and make your family and friends and children and strangers, make them listen too. Do get consent from everyone before you make them listen, though. All right, thanks for listening. Go and listen to another one. Bye-bye.